You're listening to Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. Our Great Lakes, beautiful, bewitching, and ferocious. The Great Lakes Shipwreck Museum tells us the lakes have claimed some 6,000 ships and 30,000 lives. And it is that grim yet compelling history that Cindy Hunter Morgan explores in her new collection of poems, Harborless.
Chicora, 1895, Lake Michigan. Cups and plates spilled into the lake, a terrible clattering, lost among splitting timbers. The fury was so great it exceeded sound, numbed the ears of a coal passer, who paused, mute on the tilted deck, and spotted the dishes in torrent and foam. They looked as though they were soaking in soap suds. A dipper from a gravy bowl spinning on the surface, cream from a milk crock swirling in liquid as dark as the sky. Some men he knew had already tasted it, were sinking beneath a new Milky Way.
Cindy Hunter Morgan, welcome to Stateside. That poem you just read us is called Chicora, 1895. It really paints some vivid and terrible images of the aftermath of the sinking of the Chicora. What do we know about what happened to her?
Well, she crossed Lake Michigan after the shipping season was really supposed to be over. The lake was partially frozen. The boat made it over to Milwaukee. It left from St. Joseph in Michigan, made it over to Milwaukee, and then it was unloaded. And about 15 minutes after it left Milwaukee for the return trip, a telegraph message was sent to the docks warning the captain not to sail because the barometer was falling. But it was too late. The message didn't make it, and the ship disappeared. No bodies were recovered. But after the storm, searchers found a line of wreckage frozen in ice along the shore near Saugatuck.
So many stories in this book. This is really the telling. You're telling of 40 shipping disasters on the Great Lakes, and it's such a sense of timing, and if there'd just been an extra 15 minutes, that story would have been completely different.
Yeah, it's a moment of probably, I can only imagine, great clarity and a kind of dissolution of all else that matters.
And I'm wondering what it was like for you, Cindy, as you were writing these poems, to spend that time contemplating those moments between life and death for these mariners and passengers. I mean, where did your mind and imagination take you?
Many places. In fact, all of these poems contain these imaginative moments, and I think that's what makes them poetry. That's where the balance shifts and tips them toward poetry, and that's where they become poems, are in those imaginative moments. They most have some nugget of historical accuracy, but then they do shift into this imaginative territory, and so my head went many places.
Yeah, and the book's time frame spans from wrecks that precede the Civil War to those involving, you know, modern vessels. Did that change the way that you approached or researched each poem?
No, not really. There's still people on board confronting the possibility or the certainty of death. And so that kind of confrontation likely doesn't change too much across the centuries. And in the end, that's what I'm exploring, is I'm exploring the human element here. And that kind of terror and sadness, I'm sure there were a whole mix of emotions. And I don't think those change across centuries.
As you say, starting with history and then using your imagination to take us to those moments. I'd like you to read another poem, but first tell us what it's about. The Philadelphia in 1893. What happened to that ship?
Sometimes it's interesting for me to think about, well, what started this poem? Where did it start? How did it start? And a lot of these poems started with an image or the concept of an image. And for me, the Philadelphia started with this image of these stoves at the bottom of the lake. So the Philadelphia sank in 1893. It was a steamer, and it collided with another steamer, the Albany. And the wreck is mostly intact, as is the cargo. And that image of this sort of mostly intact cargo still at the bottom of the lake is how this poem started for me. The cargo, it rests on the deck, and some of it's scattered on the bottom of the lake next to the hull. And it's part of the Thumb Area Bottomland Preserve in Lower Lake Huron.
Well, I'd love if you'd read it for us, please.
Sure. Philadelphia, 1893, Lake Huron. The ship sank with a load of cast iron stoves, which tumbled, lopsided, through white foam, green water, teal water, water as dark as coal, then darker. From deck to lake floor, they dropped 200 feet, plummeting past the white faces of lost men who stared, gaping. One man, hit by a stove, grasping for something, swung his legs around the belly of another stove sinking beside him and rode it to the bottom. When it settled in silt, he slipped off, an arm floating across his forehead, and slumped, exhausted, near the hearth. Wreck of a boy in November, done with chores.
Cindy Hunter Morgan reading her poem, Philadelphia, 1893, from her new collection, Harborless. You know, as I went through these poems, it struck me, you do a really tremendous job of creating a sense of place on a ship that may have existed over a century ago. Are you a sailor or someone in your family a mariner? You really seem to take us there.
Well, thank you. My mom and dad used to have a cottage in Bayview near Petoskey. It's an association of old Victorian summer cottages. And that's on Little Traverse Bay. And we could go down there and for $10 a day rent a little sunfish, which we did frequently. Mm-hmm. So I have really fond memories of sailing in Little Traverse Bay with my dad. And those boats are like little corks. And, you know, for days after sailing, I would feel the boat in not just my legs, in my whole body. I could feel that kind of swell and descent, that kind of rhythm. It was just lovely and kind of magical. My great-grandpa, my grandma's father, sailed the lakes on a U.S. Corps of Engineers tug to earn money to pay for her college. She went to Michigan Agricultural College in the 1920s, which is now Michigan State University. But he sailed the Great Lakes to pay for that college experience for her.
You think a lot of families in Michigan probably have those kinds of stories that echo where somebody in the family earned a trade sailing the Great Lakes. And you really do remind us of the risk behind that. Would you read us one more poem?
Sure. Henry Clay, 1851, Lake Erie. Baled wool washed ashore for weeks. At first, the appearance of each bundle was sobering and macabre. But after a few days, one woman began to look forward to the surprise and the wealth of what drifted her way. She ripped the jute bags and pulled out the stuffing, wet, still scented with grease and mystery. She dried the wool, carded it, spun it, wound it into skeins, and made scarves and sweaters. 16 men died when the ship sunk. At least something would come of the cargo they carried. Mittens for the children of friends, caps for 5 nephews. Sometimes she wondered why bales floated and men didn't, and what buoyancy meant for her own life, dry as it was.
Cindy Hunter Morgan, her new collection of poems is Harborless. She teaches creative writing and book arts at Michigan State University, and we have information on upcoming readings by just going to the stateside link at michiganradio.org. Cindy Hunter Morgan, congratulations on this beautiful collection. Thank you so much for spending time with us.
Thank you very much.